Welcome to the Iron Mind Podcast. Join me, Josh Brumley, as we explore the minds of those who forged their paths through legal battles, business triumphs, and creative conquests. In each episode, we sit down with inspiring individuals who sharpened their resolve in the fires of entrepreneurship and law. From lawyers breaking barriers to entrepreneurs overcoming obstacles, we uncover the stories behind their iron wills and innovative minds. Get ready for thought-provoking conversations, practical insights, and actionable advice. This is the Iron Mind Podcast. Today, we're excited to introduce Alan Giroge, a trailblazer who transformed the healthcare staffing industry with his company, Actriv. In 2016, Alan spotted a critical gap in healthcare staffing and set out to fill it. His vision led to the creation of Actriv, a platform that uses technology to connect healthcare professionals with needed facilities, offering unprecedented flexibility and efficiency. Under Alan's leadership, Actriv has expanded across multiple states. His journey is a powerful example of how perseverance, innovative thinking, and a commitment to positive impact can drive change in even the most traditional industries. Welcome to the show, Alan.
Thanks, Josh.
So, Alan, I'd love to hear how you first came up with the idea of creating Actriv, what the vision was for Actriv, and how that vision kind of helped you get past the initial hurdles that stopped so many entrepreneurs from starting their own business.
Wow. So Actriv, before we rebranded to Actriv, it was Action Healthcare Staffing. And back in 2016, my journey with this particular company starts in a hospital with me being a patient, being on the other side of as a recipient of the care. And that's the first time I realized how broken it was. So somewhere during my stay there, which like later towards the day, one of the nurses that was taking care of me, I noticed that she was still there longer than I felt like she had worked way too long. So I indulged in a conversation and I asked her, like, do you ever go home or do you live in a hospital? Yeah. And so she told me that her relief wasn't there, so she had to stick around a little later until they could find some help. And
how many hours do you think?
I think it was probably 2 or 3 hours in.
Wow.
And so she had this tired look on her face, but still passionate.
Yeah.
And so I asked her, like, if such situations happen, what do you do? Is there like an Uber for nurses you guys can tap into? And she told me it would be great if somebody invented that.
What were some of the game changers early on that helped you to scale from Action to Actriv, from the local staffing company that you had initially created to being a multi-state organization?
Interesting question. There was a lot of factors. For me, the reason why I chose to even register like a traditional staffing company is because you can't solve a problem you don't understand. And I wanted to be able to understand how things were done. And from that perspective, then we can figure out how do we innovate and accelerate the changes that we want to make. So we went the traditional route. And one of the opportunities that I found was majority of the staffing companies that did this did not understand the need for speed. Mm. So most of them would send an email or make phone calls to the nurses in their pool to ask them to pick up shifts. So coming into this, the first problem that I solved was speed. And it was funny the way we did it. We took Google Hangouts because it would allow us to send text messages. And we'll pick a block of shifts, curate them, and just allow the nurses to say yes or no.
So you would just send like bulk text messages to everyone and say, these are the shifts that we have available at these locations? Or
no, we became a little bit smarter that we try to tailor make them to each individual. So if they had shifts, so we had to look at their calendars and
determine. So they would put their calendars onto Google Hangouts and you would see when they weren't already working, and then propose shifts for those days off?
Yeah, so we'll find ways to like get the availability. Once we get that, we match that and send you something that was curated for you. Mm. And just say, hey, Josh, we notice you don't want to work on Saturday and Sunday. You want to work Monday through Friday, and you want day shifts. So we'll send you day shifts that are very close to you.
How many states are you in right now?
Right now, we're in seven states.
Seven states. What states are those?
So we're in Oregon, Washington, Idaho, Texas, Minnesota, and Colorado.
Mm. Okay. And so out of those states, what was the process? How do you dip your toe? Why did you choose those states?
So we started in Vancouver. Vancouver is a bridge. We're 5 minutes away from Portland, mm-hmm. so a bridge away. And most of the employees that were in Vancouver could also work in Portland, but there's a licensure requirement because they're two different states. So moving to Portland was also accidental. We didn't pick it. We started running out of opportunities in Vancouver, and we decided to take a risk. So we went and started marketing ourselves in Portland, found clients that were willing to give us a chance. We started with clients that we were servicing on the other side of Vancouver.
That had multiple locations.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. So we went to the other to Portland and build a relationship with them, and they gave us a chance based on referrals, because we'll tell them, call your sister company on the other side and find out what their experience with us was. And we knew it was a great experience because we were executing very, very fast, and we were very picky with who we hired. So we had very good, high quality clinicians. Like we had a very strict process on how we wanted our brand represented. So we had questions that we asked. We made clinicians go through a very rigorous process and try to vet them to make sure that they were the best. One of the things that the criteria for the recruiting team to vet was, could we trust this person to be able to take your view or your grammar? And if the answer was no, we wouldn't hire them. In fact, we had a KPI that required the recruiters to be able to show us their no hire list. So how many people didn't you not hire? Not how many people you hired,
but how many you flunked out of the interview process. Wow,
right.
Interesting.
And why did you not hire those people? And
that's so, an interesting metric for a recruiter, right? Usually they're incentivized by how many people they can hire and how many people they can interview and funnel through the program. But you were interested in the contrary data just as much as the data that you'd expect a recruiter to have. That's really interesting.
We wanted to encourage them to make a very good decision, and this is another KPI challenge, that you have to be able to create metrics that actually encourage very positive behaviors. And sometimes organizations usually look at it like, if I'm looking for hires, then that should be the most important metric that we look at. But you should also look at the other side that encourages them to be able to make very good decisions. And you should be able to track that, because it's a factor in the way your business is managed.
How did you, like, what was your management team like early on, and how did it develop to where it's at right now? How do you, for lack of a better term, clone yourself? Because it's really hard for a lot of business owners to get out of running the business like a law firm, being the lawyer, to being the CEO, and being able to step away from day-to-day operations and be more of a visionary and be more of a strategic thinker. And I think a lot of people have a hard time finding someone who can step into that role of being the operator and being able to elevate themselves. How did you do that? How was that team building process for you?
Wow, that's a very interesting question. So there are multiple stages that every entrepreneur needs to understand, that at every stage in your company, you as a leader, you'll have to develop different skills. At the very early stages of your company, you have to learn how to do everything. And at a very much later matured part of your business, you need to be able to learn how to lead and manage a system, mm-hmm. not people. And the system has people. And I'll explain that. When I started, we didn't have job titles. I had three or four business cards that I used depending on what I was doing. I had one for business development. I had one for the CEO. I had one for whatever. And if I'm going out for business development, I was never the CEO. I always presented myself as business development. If I was going out talking to lawyers to be able to learn different things about laws, then I was a CEO. So you get to learn how to wear multiple hats. And that's the same thing that I expected from anybody that I hired, is that we won't have very specific job titles. The mission will be the boss, not a title, we didn't have this hierarchical structure. It was just, we show up and whatever the mission for the day, not the mission for the company, the mission for the day. Because you're a very young startup, you're basically trying to survive.
Right.
And whatever you show up that day that shows up on your plate is the mission for the day. And so that was the boss. And whoever had the most competency to be able to do that was the one that led everybody else. So there was some autonomy in the way we were doing things. So if today our biggest thing is recruiting, the person with the highest skills in recruiting was the one that was in charge. Basically, they were the ones helping navigate everybody else, and the rest of the team was there to be able to help get that mission to become very successful. As we started growing, I realized that I had to start empowering other people. I fell in my early days because I didn't know how to create right, better processes and policies. And so there was a huge gap because I brought on people and we were growing very fast. That's the other challenge. My entire mindset was focused on growth versus how we're going to run this thing.
How do you think your leadership style and the company culture has evolved since the beginning and early days? Has your leadership style changed at all? Have you been the same type of leader from the early days of Action and Active to today?
My leadership skills and style has evolved a lot. As a brand new leader, as an entrepreneur just getting into the industry, there is a lot you don't know. And walking into this with the mindset that you don't know what you don't know, and that there will be a lot to learn, and your leadership style is going to evolve with at different stages in your company. When you're managing five people, your leadership skill set are very different versus when you're running an organization with 1,000+ employees. Because a newer, like a small organization, you might not have to worry about how you communicate. Mm-hmm. You can walk into an office, talk to your five employees, and deliver the message. But when you have 1,000 people, you have to learn how to communicate and be very efficient in doing that. So over time, at every stage in the company, I learned how to evolve as a leader. And I also evolved based on the amount of knowledge that I was gaining as I went, as I grew the business. Starting the company, I didn't care about risk. Growing the company, I started learning more about risk.
Right.
At the early stages, I didn't care about how things were done, what we said, how we were just having fun. Like, it was a fun culture. And we wanted it to stay that way. But then as the company grew, we had to learn how to be more focused, making sure that we have I could give very clear directions as to where the organization was going. And I also had to learn how to pick the team members that I needed to be able to run a very large organization versus when I just had my friends that were coming to work with me and all we were doing is just having fun building this thing.
Yeah. Right?
So definitely a lot of changes, and it's not the same leadership style.
Can you share a challenge that you faced while scaling and how you overcame it? Like what a big takeaway was from a challenging moment in building the business that you have. How many employees do you have right now? Do you know?
So we have about 1,300 employees on payroll every week. That's mostly clinical employees. Mm-hmm. So the ones we have about 5,000 people active in the system. That because Active is a W-2 employer, so we employ all the nurses. And one thing that sets us apart from most staffing companies is that we actually employ our employees. We give them
benefits,
major right. medical, dental, vision, 401k. We give them sick time and vacation pay, which mm. is unheard of in the gig economy. So those ones count. And then I have a team of almost 80 employees internally that work for us, supporting that group. And it's everything from engineers to sales to support. And we're actually very global. So some of them are in the United States, some of them are offshore. We do have an office in Kenya. We have a team out of India. We have others in the Philippines. So we have quite a diverse team across the world.
What was the, so about 1,300 employees roughly, but can you give an example of a challenge, something that maybe you learned a valuable lesson that other people could learn without going through the same challenge you went through?
Whew. Scaling a business is painful. It's very, very painful if you don't know, if you haven't built the right infrastructure that allows you to scale. I learned something from Paul Graham, from Y Combinator. And one of the things he says is that if you want to build an organization that scales, you have to learn to do things that don't scale. And sometimes trying to figure out what doesn't scale is very, very hard. So before we started scaling, we didn't have the right infrastructure that allowed us to do that. We didn't spend, we were growing fast, so we didn't have time to really think through certain things that were critical in terms of scale. So we didn't have very clearly written policies. So there was a lot of gray areas and a lot of questions that we didn't answer because we were just trying to scale. Mm-hmm. And those became our biggest hindrance when we took our first leap. And it was like, oh, this is bad. We didn't think through this. We didn't think through that. Now we have a lot of risk exposure. And that's something that I would encourage anybody that is thinking about scaling to really take their time and think about how to scale. And learning how any process, because once you put so many people into a certain process, you'll be able to see the shortcomings of that particular system if you didn't think through it. And we didn't. We were just growing. And so
did you have to then retroactively, while you're growing, build out processes that maybe had to change over time anyway?
Yes, so we had to be decisive, mm-hmm. that at every stage we had to think through things before we did them. Mm-hmm. We had to document our processes. We had to get everybody involved. Initially, it would be a small group of people saying, okay, I'm head of recruiting and I'm head of customer success. We are going into Idaho. Let's go make this happen. And they never involved the other parties. They never involved payroll, billing, pricing, all these things. So it was just like, let's just do this. Or sales would go out and get all these contracts in a different state, and nobody was prepared for us
to service them.
Right. So we came back and we decided for us to scale, we're going to build a framework. And I think this is one of the things that every entrepreneur should learn. how to build a framework that works for you. And so we went back and decided, if we are going to scale, what is the framework that we'll use? It's just something that you can rinse, repeat multiple times, and it allows you to
have the same results.
Right. And once you've created the framework, how do you make iterations as you go? So we had to really test it. And so at every time we executed something new or 2x move, we'll go back and do a status check on ourselves. Like, how did we do? What did we miss? What worked out? What didn't work out? What should we change so that, how do we update this framework? And we were doing things on Notion, so it was pretty easy for us to go back, and Notion allowed us to be able to like see, like everybody could collaborate, because you know who's working on what. So we'd go back and change whatever we didn't work out, or whatever worked out. We were able to mark it as, this worked out, so don't touch it unless you really have something much better than that.
Just in closing, I want to ask about a time when something didn't go as planned, but it taught you something valuable, or it opened up new doors. Where, what was a way that you fell down that was actually a really valuable lesson in Actorv's history?
Ooh. Yeah, I'll tell you. When we started growing very fast, and we were at a place where we felt the need for us to invest a lot of money in R&D, as a person that comes from a tech background, I was passionate in really developing cutting-edge solutions. And it was what we did. We went out and built our first product that was built in-house, and it was a fail. It actually affected our business significantly. And looking at what we had created, so we built our own interface that allowed the facilities to be able to communicate with us, the fast version of it, and we failed tremendously. There was a lot. When it comes to building a software, you really need to have a very good team. They have to be very focused, and you have to have a lot of things in place. And this is why I wouldn't recommend anybody, if you don't have the right resources to go out and build a software, don't do it. If you can find something else that works for you and you just focus on growing your business, do that until you're in a place where you feel like, I really have to have this. Because once you start building a software, you have to put a team together that develops it and keeps making changes. And you also have to learn how to collect the feedback and do something with it, and also maintain the solution. So there was a lot of things initially we didn't have in place, and we failed. But something interesting came out of this. When we put the software in front of our clients, they actually informed us. We learned so much because we got a chance to interact with them at another level that we had never done. So we were able to ask a lot of questions about how they do resource planning, how they determine how many nurses they need on the floor, and questions that we didn't, because as a staffing company, you only get to deal with their problems when they have determined what the problem is. And that doesn't tell you what else. How did they come up to that conclusion? And sometimes if they didn't get it right, it ends up affecting your business, because we're getting quite a lot of cancellations from our end. And that's predominantly because majority of them didn't even have the right tools to do scheduling. And they never looked at scheduling as something very vital. And most of the organizations never thought about finding scheduling tools, because if you have an EMR and you're able to collect patient data and you're able to pay people, those become the most critical softwares that you need, and a bookkeeping software. Mm-hmm. And so the rest of them, if you're not a very large organization, then there's no need for you to even have a scheduling software. So people tend to do like whiteboards and stuff, Excel, yeah, clipboards. And that was affecting us. So when we introduced our first platform, we got a lot of feedback because they kept asking us, could this work for us? What else could this thing do? Even though we internally we were like, yeah, we failed because we didn't execute it very well. But we got a lot of feedback that helped us understand
how to do better.
How to do better, but not just how to do better. We found another problem. There's a lot of complexities that go in determining the number of resources you need to be able to take care of a patient. So, for instance, in a skilled nursing facility, you'd have X number of patients in your facility that have very different acuity levels. So the level of care that each patient requires is very different depending on what they need, both medically and personally. And there's a lot that goes into determining the number of resources they have. And then once they've determined the number of resources the number of resources they need, once they determine that, then they place their own internal employees and then leverage workforce partners. If the census goes up, then they can be able to reach out to a staffing company and say, we need more people to come in and help us. So we got to understand how that process works. And that helped us create an opportunity for our next innovation. So we started working on an AI to be able to help streamline this entire process. Mm. Like, how do we account for patient acuity, the patient's senses, and be able to actually help them with resource planning and be able to create the right to be able to determine
mix of staff.
Right. And if you don't have the staff within your building, you're able to tap into a marketplace that allows you to be able to find what you need just in time. Like, if you need someone right now or a month out,
or the next day,
schedule that out. So that presented us with an opportunity to start building the next generation acuity-based scheduling software. And that came out from a failure that we had, and we thought, oh, this is a failure. And now we're actually building really cutting-edge solutions that will drive and streamline the way healthcare workforce is done.
Wow, that's super exciting. Thank you very much, Alan, for sharing all this information. If people are interested in looking more into your business, you want to share the website, you want to share some social media details?
So it's www.actrive.com. That's our main brand. We also have a job board called NextNurse, www.nextnurse.com. And then the AI that we are developing is called ShiftNext. So that one is, right now we are currently beta testing with a very select group of clients. So hopefully by the end of this year, we'll release the first version to the public.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, Alan. And thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.